What's up, sunshine? It's Thursday, February 13th. Happy Friday Eve and happy Valentine's Day Eve. If you haven't already, write that card, pick that flower, or just get a big old hug plant and a smile to show the people you love them tomorrow. Let's spark some joy. I'm Coy Wire. I'm here to fuel your mind and get you caught up on the latest news from around the world without all the extra stuff. CNN 10 starts now. We start today with something we all hope to avoid each and every winter, the flu. Right now in the U.S., this flu season has been the most intense one we've seen in 15 years. When it comes to the number of doctor's office visits for flu-like symptoms, which is one indicator of flu activity, last week's data from the CDC shows that the number topped the peak of any winter flu season since the one in 2009 to 2010, which also had a global outbreak of swine flu, or H1N1. The good news is CDC and hospital data show viral infections, like COVID-19 and RSV, appear to be on the decline nationally. But that means doctors are finding that the vast majority of illnesses have been the flu, plus some strep throat. February is traditionally the peak of flu season, but so far the CDC says there have already been at least 24 million cases of the flu, 310,000 hospitalizations, and 13,000 deaths. While 43 states overall reported high or very high flu activity last week, the flu was the most intense in the South, Southwest, and Western states. The flu has spread so intensely this season that some schools have been forced to close. One large school system in Texas had 650 out of over 3,000 students out sick, plus 60 staff members. That closed the school for 3 days. Doctors say some good habits to avoid the flu are: avoid touching your eyes, your nose, and mouth. This can help prevent the germs from spreading. Also, wash your hands and wash them often. Each time you do wash them, spend at least 20 seconds doing so with soap and water. And make sure to avoid close contact with anyone who is sick. In the Middle East, a fragile ceasefire deal that put an end to major hostilities between Israel and Hamas is at risk of falling apart. Israel and Hamas are each stepping up allegations that the other party violated the deal, leading Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to order the military there to raise its level of readiness. Our Jeremy Diamond brings us up to speed on some of what's happening there and what's at stake.
Well, the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas certainly seems to be hanging on by a thread. The most precarious moment in its 3-week existence so far for a ceasefire that was supposed to last at least 6 weeks. The Israeli Prime Minister now issuing this ultimatum, saying if Hamas does not return our hostages by Saturday noon, quote, the ceasefire will end, saying that Israeli troops who have already begun to amass in greater numbers along the Gaza border will return to the fight in Gaza until, quote, Hamas is completely defeated. Now, the Israeli Prime Minister didn't go quite as far as President Trump when he made his ultimatum yesterday, saying that all of the hostages, meaning all 76 hostages still being held in Gaza, should be returned by Saturday. Otherwise, the ceasefire should be canceled. Instead, an Israeli official telling me that Israel is demanding that all 9 remaining living hostages who were set to be released during phase one, that they be released in the coming days, indicating that the Prime Minister is perhaps trying to stay intentionally vague here, leaving himself a little bit of wiggle room to strike a deal by Saturday that would keep this ceasefire alive. Nonetheless, this is a serious threat to this agreement, especially since Hamas has said that it won't release any hostages this coming Saturday, accusing Israel of a series of ceasefire violations, including carrying out attacks against Palestinians in Gaza. And indeed, today, the Palestinian Ministry of Health saying that 92 people have been killed by Israeli fire or shelling since the start of this ceasefire agreement.
As officials in the U.S. work to contain an outbreak of bird flu, egg prices keep getting higher. A trip to the grocery store for eggs these days often means empty shelves because of short supply, or just pure sticker shock when seeing the price tag. This eggflation, so to speak, is now eclipsing previous 2022 prices, with the average wholesale prices reaching $8 for one dozen of large eggs. Our Nick Watt went to a ranch in Lakeside, California to show us how eggs are being rationed and how customers are reacting.
You can have two.
Frank Hilliker is rationing his eggs. The line forms, a
around 7 a.m.
How many eggs do you eat?
Myself, probably three a day.
What?
Yeah.
That's a lot, no?
That's a normal amount.
2 dozen?
The average American eats about 284 eggs a year. Well, they used to.
You're consciously dialing back on the eggs?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Because of the price?
Right.
President Donald Trump claims the high price of eggs helped him win the White House.
They would double and triple the price over a short period of time. And I won an election based on that.
He made wild promises.
We're going to bring prices way down and we'll get it done fast.
And he got egged in the first White House briefing.
Egg prices have skyrocketed since President Trump took office.
Democratic lawmakers urged him in a letter to crack down on corporate profiteering.
The smell's rather noticeable.
What smell?
Do you eat a lot of them?
No. It's too expensive. It's gone from $2-3 a dozen to $9 a dozen.
That's massive.
It is. It's crazy.
And predicted by the USDA to climb even higher.
Current egg shortage is because of the bird flu.
It is. Period. Fully.
Because of the bird flu.
The only way to stop the spread is to cull millions of infected birds, so slashing egg supply.
These astronomical prices are all due on supply and demand. Economics 101. There's nothing Biden could have done to stop the bird flu. Look, there's nothing President Trump could have done to stop the bird flu. It's neither of their faults.
You literally have all your eggs in the one basket.
Yes, I do. Gotta be careful with that.
There are so many other bad egg word plays that we could use, but...
Exactly.
Pop quiz hot shot. Which U.S. president first federally designated February as Black History Month? Abraham Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt, Gerald Ford, or Jimmy Carter? Ding ding! If you said President Gerald Ford, you are correct. He was the first president to officially recognize February as Black History Month back in 1976. Today we are giving a 10 out of 10 to two stories about two trailblazers who've made a lasting impact as we celebrate Black History Month. Jane Bolin, born in 1908. She was super focused and dedicated as a kid, graduating high school at just 15 years old. Having to persevere the challenges of growing up as a Black girl in that era, she would rise up and go on to become the first Black woman to graduate from Yale Law School. And she didn't stop there. She later became the first Black woman to join the New York City Bar Association, and the first in U.S. history to become a judge. She served on the bench for 40 years, where she ended segregated child care facilities and race-based assignments of probation officers. You know what she would say later? She said she wasn't concerned about being the first, second, or even the last, because her primary concern was her work. Next up, Max Robinson, who in 1978 became the first Black person to anchor a nightly network news show on ABC's World News Tonight.
Across the country, Frank, the city of Cleveland, which has received...
Robinson started his career nearly two decades earlier at a local news station in Virginia. Listen to this. His face was hidden behind a graphic. He later moved to Washington and became the first Black anchor in a major U.S. city. Robinson became an outspoken critic of racism and of the way African Americans were portrayed in the media. He'd go on to become one of the founders of the National Association of Black Journalists, a true difference maker leading the way. All right, time now for the best part of the show. I have two shout outs today, and one comes with a big old apology. I forgot to mention the school name of our Your Word Wednesday winners yesterday. So let's try this again. Mr. Payone and the home of the Irish at Prince of Peace Catholic School in Clinton, Iowa, rise up. And to the Raiders at Windsor Locks High School in Windsor Locks, Connecticut, we see you. Thank you for making the show part of your day. Thanks to all of you for joining us today. Remember, no matter how your week has gone so far, there's still time to make it great or even greater. I'll see you right back here tomorrow for our Friday edition of CNN 10.